The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Dee Cullen is a big talent. We played his song All Right a couple of weeks ago and he's in to perform live music with us today in Studio 10. We have Danny and Daniel and Megan and Pauline from Pulling With My Parents after 4 o'clock. I watched it. It's very entertaining and it does exactly what it says on the tin. Two 20-somethings, as in Megan and Danny, hand over their mobile phones, their smartphones, to their parents, Pauline and Danny, and allow them go on their Tinders and their Bumbles and whatever else they have and pick a possible suitor for them. And it's a great idea, great programme, and we're going to be talking to them after 4 o'clock. And Mary O'Rourke will be live from our Athlone studio to talk us through the soundtrack to her life, and I'm sure she has opinions about the current state of affairs and Brexit. Tomorrow is another D-Day, crunch day. Now, which is more likely, that Boris Johnson will get the deal through the British Parliament or Ireland will beat New Zealand in the quarterfinal of the Rugby World Cup? What do you think? What do you think? Which is the most likely there to happen? 51551, ray@rte.ie. And RTE have been doing a brilliant job in covering Brexit over the last century. I was talking to Philip Boucher Hayes yesterday and he said he did his first... I was complimenting him on the report he did for Drive Time yesterday evening and he said, do you know, because he would say it like that, do you know, Ray, that I did my first Brexit report 3 years ago and it's still going on? It's still going on. And there's Sean Whelan and Tony Connolly and everybody else and of course Tommy Gorman. What a way Tommy has with words and metaphors and analogies. And he writes a blog. I didn't know this, but Neil brought my attention to the fact that Tommy Gorman writes a blog. And on yesterday's historic goings-on, it'll only be historic, of course, if they get it through. If not, it'll just be added to the abyss of Brexit nearly D-Days that have happened over the last year or so. Anyway, in trying to explain how the DUP might have felt yesterday after being given the heave-ho by Boris Johnson, this is Tommy's blog. He says, if we are honest, we all experience the feeling at some stage in our lives, and it is an awful gunk. You go to a disco or function with someone, things seem to be going swimmingly, but then they disappear out a side door with somebody else and you're left high and dry. Early this morning, that was yesterday morning, the DUP learned a horrible lesson about Boris Johnson. The aftershock is too raw at the moment for them to understand. This is a case of tough love. What they have discovered to their cost is that Boris is promiscuous. Politically, that is. And it goes on and on and on for pages and pages and pages. And at the very end he goes, Leo, take note. In other words, it's the DUP today, but it could be you in a while. Because it's all smiles and that picture. They're hoping that picture will go into the history books. Him and Boris from that meeting, which started the whole thing rolling. And they're in this tree-lined avenue. And you could see nearly them holding hands and you could put iris it into a heart-shaped thing and just fudge all the trees out and two lads skipping off into the sunset, Boris and Leo. Anyway, we'll see what happens tomorrow. Did you know, sound like Philip Boucher Hayes now, that the Final Say rally will be happening tomorrow anyway in London? And they're expecting nearly 1 million people on the streets of London. I don't know with what's going on whether there will be 1 million people, but this is a sort of rally calling for a second referendum. And the person who's going to be emceeing at that rally is Andrew Maxwell. Alistair Campbell met him recently and he said, oh, you're the man from the telly who says all those intelligent things about Brexit. Would you come down and emcee our rally? And he's going to do that tomorrow and then he's going to fly over and appear with us on the telly tomorrow night. So he'll be in the thick of it. In the thick of it. And of course, the Final Say rally will be negated if Boris Johnson gets the vote through Parliament tomorrow. Other things that are happening this weekend. There's a big cheesy 90s thing on tomorrow night in Three Arena. And I suppose to coincide with that, they've announced that Punchestown next year will have the cheesiest of cheesiest outdoor concerts with all of those brilliant acts from the 90s that we know and love. Yes, yes, yes. Go on. There you go. All of them in one place. Punchestown next year, 27th of June. And all of them, bar of 2 Unlimited, are in the Three Arena over the weekend. Also in there, Venga Boys. Remember the Venga Bus? Yeah. And E17. Stay Another Day. Yeah. See, I was of a certain age, so I'd moved on a bit from that sort of music in the 90s. I was listening to Nirvana. Nirvana. Never Mind. What? A brilliant album. Play it loud and play it often. Anyway, I see that they're selling Kurt Cobain's cardigan. You see, he made cardigans cool. He made cardigans cool. People often slag me because I had a penchant for cardigans over the years. They're selling the cardigan he wore during the famous Nirvana MTV Unplugged session. Remember that? It was one of the best. And it produced, yeah. Yeah, Nirvana's version of David Bowie's The Man Who Sold the World. Anyway, the cardigan is unwashed. Darren Julian of Julian's Auction says it's very important that we don't wash it. The stains are still there. There's even cigarette burns that you can see on the sweater. It's not a sweater, Darren. It's a cardigan. It's a button-up cardigan, and it's grey. The current owner is a businessman who prefers to remain anonymous, kept the piece stored in acid-free tissue in a safe. I don't understand, you see. I don't understand. So, first of all, like, I better tell you what they're bidding for. At the moment, there have been three bids, and the top bid at the moment is $140,000 for a cardigan. $140,000 for a cardigan. And they estimate that it's going to go to $200,000 or $300,000. So that man who owns it now bought it, wrapped it in tissue and put it in a safe. Huh? Did he take it out of a Saturday night and put it on and play Nirvana loud, jump around the place to Smells Like Teen Spirit? I doubt it very much. What, does he just know that he has it and that makes him feel good? I just don't understand that. I don't understand that, but there you go. As I was saying, pulling with my parents, we have it on where we have Danny and Daniel and Megan and Pauline on after 4 o'clock. And I'm going to ask them about this new phenomenon, doobie-doobie, called dog fishing. And you know when you go on, well, I don't know because I've never been on one, but people tell me when you go on to Tinder and Bumble and those sort of things, you have a picture, your profile picture. And it's very important that you catch a potential suitor's attention by your picture. This is how men are doing it. They're borrowing other people's pets, particularly cute puppies. And they're posing with them and they're putting that up as their profile picture. And then a girl or a lad comes along and says, oh, look, the puppy's lovely and he likes dogs and he's so sweet. So they like him, swipe right or left, whatever you're supposed to do, end up meeting them, and then they find out to their horror, dun, 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 that he doesn't own the puppy, he just borrowed it. They've been dogfished. So there's your new word for the weekend. I love giving you a new word just to bring with you over the weekend. Dogfishing. Discuss that with your mates over the weekend. Ireland will win. Come on, the lads. We will wallop the Kiwis. We won't wallop them. And Boris will get a dose of tough, says Alan. Ireland will win, of course. Boris is a politician. They have no loyalty whatsoever. Tommy Gorman's analogy got it right. Give me the Venga Boys over Nirvana any day, says that person. We won't be going out on a date, you and me. If you prefer the Venga Boys to Nirvana, that'd be a deal breaker for me. 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. Good afternoon. Share with us some good news and sing us a few songs. Always good company. So that's tomorrow night on the telly. And we have Alison Hammond, who is a star of This Morning, along with Philip Schofield and Holly Willoughby. She goes out and interviews the stars. Didn't know much about her. She was sort of on the fringes of my radar, but then I watched a lot of her stuff and it's brilliant. You have to watch the interview she did with Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford. She's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And she's on the show tomorrow, is Alison Hammond. And we have PJ Gallagher and Andrew Maxwell, as I said, and that's on the telly at about 5 to 10. Tommy Gorman's blog is a real fly-on-the-wall account about Brexit, says JJ. And my husband and I believe Tommy Gorman should be our next president. His calmness and synopsis of events are second to none, says Clare and County Meath. Of course, to do a good analogy on anything, you have to have a good grasp of what you're talking about. And he always seems to have that. On online dating, you need to look closely at the profile pics people use in online dating. You can tell if they're mad for the drink or more into partying than dating. I suppose you'd know, yeah, you would, if there's always a drink in their hands. And please play The Man Who Sold the World in full someday soon. I will next week to celebrate the sale of the grey cardigan. And somebody says, I have a cardigan that I wore when I was at Nirvana many moons ago in Nancy Spain's in Cork. How much do you reckon I might get for it? Is Nancy Spain's in Cork or Limerick? Very little, I'd say. Very little. Hi, it's Declan and Skerries. Hi, Declan and Skerries. I think Ireland will win the rugby and Boris will lose the vote tomorrow. She's a legend, Alison Hammond. And yeah, Nancy Spain's is in Cork. There's another place. Maybe there's another Nancy Spain's in Limerick. Maybe it was a sort of one of those ones that had a few places around the place. 51551, ray@rte.ie. And I meant to mention about Aisling Bea. She's in all the papers today. She was at the launch of her new Netflix series called Living With Yourself. She's starring alongside Paul Rudd. And she looks every inch the Hollywood star. And we're all very proud of her down in Kildare. She was from out the road between Kildare and Monaster Evan. So very proud of her, and she looks amazing, and it's brilliant that she's having all that success. And if you haven't seen the sitcom series that she penned herself, This Way Up, and she stars in, that's brilliant too. 515 on ray@rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551, it's Nancy Blake's in Limerick and Nancy Spain is in Cork. That's my mix up there. Now, every Friday we invite somebody into a studio. I'm saying a studio today because the turn of Mary O'Rourke, and she's in her Athlone studio. Good afternoon, Mary.
Hello, Ray. Hello to all of you. And hands off the Athlone studio. We love having it.
That's the only reason you agreed to do this, Mary. Is there rumour going around Athlone that RTE are going to close the studio, is there?
Well, no, but every day you read horrific articles how hard up everyone is. And I said to myself, well, I'm going to shout out about Athlone. So I've done that bit. And the second thing I want to shout out a bit is I'm delighted you've Brian Kennedy tomorrow night on your TV. Brian Kennedy, Catherine Lynch and myself spent an hour a month for 3 years reading books together, and I made a great friendship with Brian, and he's a good guy.
Great. Times are tough here, Mary. We're not over exaggerating it. We'll see what happens in the coming, but we do need a state broadcaster that's independent.
Oh yes, and I agree.
Anyway, we'll leave that there, park it. Now it's your life. It's your life, as Brian Kennedy has just sung. It's your life, and looking forward to chatting to you about it, because people know your political life, but they don't probably know too much about Mary O'Rourke before that. So that's what we're going to concentrate on. So you were born in 1937.
A long time ago.
To Annie and Pádraig, or PJ.
Yeah, Annie Scanlon, Annie Lenehan and PJ. Sometimes if she was cross with them, she'd call them Pádraig. Yeah, PJ.
Yeah, and whereabouts in the country?
In Athlone. Oh, I'm Athlone, bred, born and reared, yes.
And where were your two parents from?
My mother was from Sligo, from Drumcliff, and my father was from Clare.
And how did they meet, Mary?
Oh, well, they were students, county council scholarships of the day in to Galway, UCG, as it then was. And they met as students, and in the old-time fashion, they fell in love, and then they married.
And that was a time when only You know, privileged people went to university, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, well, they went on a scholarship.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that was under the old regime, if you like, but there was apparently there was a very good system of county council scholarships, and both from her school in Sligo and my father from St. Flannan's in Clare, both of them got county council scholarships to go to Galway. Oh, neither. They wouldn't have gone, only they got the cash to do so.
Right. And why did they choose Athlone? Was it a midpoint, a halfway point?
No, that's a fierce long story, Ray.
Was it right? Okay.
Well, I'll try and kind of put it together very quickly. My father went on then to become a civil servant in revenue.
Yeah.
And he was moved to Dundalk. He was married at this stage to my mother. And they moved to Dundalk, where she had child number one, and 12 months later, child number two. And then he was moved to Tralee, we hope on promotion, I don't know anything about that, where they had my sister Anne, and then my father, to head office in Dublin Castle, in the revenue, a good civil servant. Mm. And they lived out in Sutton, in County Dublin. And at that time, Sean Lamass was Minister for Industry and Commerce, and he had business with my father in Dublin Castle, and he kind of liked the look of him and the jib of him, and he said to him, would he take time off from the civil service and go down to Athlone, where the government were going to set up a state-owned cotton factory.
Right.
My father said, fine, I'll do that. And he went home and told my mother, and he said to her, pack your traps, Annie, we're leaving for Athlone. Anyway, they were both country people, so Athlone sounded halfway to Sligo, halfway to Clare.
Yeah.
And they went off, and she arrived in Athlone with three children aged 5, 6 and 7, and I was in her tummy.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and therefore I was born in Athlone. So they set up in the middle, it was General Textiles Limited, and at its height, Ray, it employed 1,000 people.
And state-owned?
State-owned. When you think of it now, it's an amazing thing. And we lived, there had been a Protestant boys' secondary boarding school on the land that the state bought, and in the middle of it was the old house of the boarding school, and we lived not over the shop, but in the shop, in the middle of the shop.
The middle of the factory?
In the middle of the factory, in this real old-fashioned, terribly cold boarding school that used to be for Protestant boys called Ranelagh School. And yeah, there was I spent my childhood, and the others too, and we had a great time. It was on the banks of the river, my father got an old rowing boat, but none of us were allowed into the boat until we could swim. And I remember my mother and we going off up the river saying, imagine there were no life jackets that time, there were no health and safety, there was nothing like that. But she used to say to us, if the boat overturns, swim for the nearest shore. The nearest
good
shore,
advice,
you know.
Yeah.
And so off we used to go. Yes, we. Yeah. And he taught us all to swim, my father did, in the cold River Shannon.
Mm.
And that's why that kind of swimming, I always appealed to me, open swimming rather than swimming pools. Yeah.
So we found a factory hooter. I don't know if this sounds like the one that would have went off back
every
in the day.
Eight
then.
Hours.
Let's,
every
let's
8 hours.
Let's have a listen.
Yeah.
Yes. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, that went off right through the town every 8 hours, because at one time there was full employment round the clock, and that went off and we were in the middle of it. But that's why, you know, a hooter is one of my earliest kind of memories
yeah,
of of noise.
And
from
what
childhood.
Was Mary? It was textile. And yeah, then where did the textile go then? What was it used for?
Oh, all over the world. They made fabulous sheets, constellation sheets and towels and pillowcases.
Right.
And there was a BDF, bleaching, dyeing, finishing. Oh, it was...
Oh, so it was a finished product, it wasn't
it? It was a finished product.
Ah, yes.
And out it was. And in those years, Ireland was in a kind of a protected status. But anyway, later on, that was to change, as you know. And yet, when I go places, I may be doing a talk, and if I talk about Gentex, as it was called, and I say to the audience, has anybody here got Constellation sheets? And at least three women will put up their hands that they have them.
Where did the name Constellation come from?
Do you know, I don't know that.
Yeah.
But the whole advertising was about Constellation. And another day I was at something and I met the woman who was the model standing with the Constellation sheets.
She modelled sheets.
She modelled sheets, but not around her. No.
I know.
But anyway, that was my childhood.
And that was one of the sounds from your childhood. What about your first memory? Your first living memory.
I remember vividly, I was thinking about that when you asked me the question. When Neil put the question to me. You see, I can vividly remember I was only four and I was being brought down to school on the back of a woman called Bridgie Breen's bike.
Right.
And I was cocked up at the back of it and I started to cry and snivel. I can remember the snivelling and the crying, roaring crying. And she stopped at a shop and she went in and she bought a club milk. There were club milks then. And she came out and gave it to me and that stopped me howling.
Who was Bridgie Breen?
And Bridgie Breen was a lovely young woman who, when my mother had the two babies, one after another, in Dundalk, this young woman from Louth came to help her in the house. And then when we moved to Tralee, she went with her. And when we moved from Tralee to Dublin, she went with her. And when we moved from Dublin to Athlone, she came with the family, like. And then she married an Athlone guy, finally, after all her travels. And that was Bridgie Breen. But I can so fondly remember her because she was just like another mother in the house.
I'd imagine once you got used to school, you liked it?
I did. But primary school, when I see children now and grandchildren and all that going to, they have a great time, as you know, Ray. Mm. In primary school now, they're taught to be themselves and to paint and to have adventures and all those things. Oh no, we were clocked into our seats with the Sister of Mercy in charge and there wasn't much straying from that. No.
Seen and not heard, I suppose.
Oh yes, seen and not heard,
Well, when you got out from the restrictions and the confines of school, what sort of child were you?
I was thinking about that too. I was kind of a notice box, you know. I was.
I'm not surprised, Mary.
don't be laughing unkindly at me.
No, but I mean, you wanted a bit of attention.
Yeah, I did. We used to put on little plays. My father gave us an empty room that was in this Ranelagh school. And myself and a gang, boys and girls and my family, we used to put on little plays and they were very inventive and very good. And I remember after one of them, my father saying to my mother, she'll be on the stage yet, Annie, she'll be on the stage. Mm. And I often thought about it. I suppose politics in a way is on a stage, isn't it?
Of course it is, yes, of course it is. You have to have a bit of an actor in you, don't you?
Yeah, you do. But
and a bit of a notice box. I've never heard that expression before. A notice box,
somebody looking for notice.
Wanted a bit of attention.
A kind of a show-off, you know?
Well,
a bit of a show-off, yeah.
And your dad, was he into singing and dancing and getting people to notice him?
No, not really. No. I think it was because I was the youngest of the four. You know, there were 3, 1, 2, 3, as there used to be. Then there was a long gap and a couple decided again. And I was the result of that.
Yeah.
But
What sort of man was he?
Oh, he was a very outgoing guy, Ray. Mm. Very outgoing. Sort of enthusiastic about everything. And he was, very affirmative and ebullient and... And, you know, he was a real outgoing guy, outgoing altogether. I can remember so vividly all of that. You could never down him, you know. He wasn't going to be put down. But he did a lot of good. He was a great guy. But anyway, that was it. He was that kind of a personality. My mother, on the other hand, was kind of more cultured. That sounds a bit odd because they both had the same kind of education. But she would be quieter, you know.
Mm.
I suppose having all those kids was no easy task.
Four was a small enough family back then.
Was it?
Well, sure.
I always thought I was part of a big family.
No, not at all. Back in the day, like, I'm from a family of nine, and then the Harringtons down the road were 14.
Oh, yeah.
And then the Flynns up the way, I think, were 18. And, you know, there was loads of nines. And
I suppose.
Few tens,
Well, I think all the travelling around the country.
Probably, yeah. It felt like there were more. I'm going to play you this song and tell me the significance of it after we play it in.
As the sun was set. On a bright meadow
of Shelmaleer, a rebel hand
set the heather blazing and brought the neighbours from far and near.
There you go.
I sang that with
the Clancy Brothers there.
With
accompaniment by Mary O'Rourke.
Well, yeah. Bool of Oak, when my father would get into his cups, but particularly around Christmas time when they'd had a factory party and everybody was in good humour, and he would be asked to sing. And he had two songs. One was Bool of Oak. I don't know why. I suppose when he was a young student, maybe it was a rebel song they sang. I don't know. And the other one was The Queen of Connemara, which is about a boat. It's a beautiful song as well.
We have that here. Will I give that a spin as well?
I'll just sing a little bit of it. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. She will ride in her pride like a seagull.
Oh, I can see him standing there,
can you?
The crowd around him, and he's singing. I can, of course.
And what was that expression you used there? I'm loving these expressions. Was it when he was cupped or cups or what?
When he was in his cups.
In his cups, right.
Did you never hear that?
I've never heard that, Mary, no.
Well, it is a man or woman, it has a couple of drinks too many.
They're in their cups.
And they're in their cups, yeah.
Isn't it, because it sounds like a love song, but it's about a boat.
It's about a boat, a lovely Connemara boat, the Queen of Connemara. They were his two specials, and he would launch into one or the other. Yeah. So whenever I hear either of those now, and interestingly enough, I was recently at Noel Whelan's funeral mass, and God rest him, and they alone musician played that at the end of the mass, because of course he was from Wexford.
So there was no TV in the house at the beginning.
Not at all. Sure, when Neil asked me that, I roared laughing. Sure, we didn't have TV in Ireland, I think 1961, 62, yeah. And so there was no TV.
We'll go back to radio in a minute, but just, can you remember seeing a TV for the first time?
Yes, I can, and it was very cloudy.
Yes.
I was married in 1960, and Enda said, we're going to get a TV.
Mm.
That was my husband, my late husband, God rest him too. But he went out and he bought a TV, and we got the guy who hooked it up, and the two of us sat down to look at it. And it was very cloudy.
Yeah.
Very cloudy. But anyway.
I would imagine it was remarkable and exciting all the same.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, we're going to hear everything that's going on everywhere else, you know, and being curious as I was. And, of course, it very quickly became kind of, you had to view. It was necessary viewing all the time.
Mm.
But it was, so, no TV.
So, prior to that, yes, it was the radio.
Radio, all the time.
And BBC, we got a clip from 1940, so you would have been eight.
No, not in 1940. I was.
Sorry, three. Sorry.
Will you stop it, Ray?
Sorry, I'm aging you, Mary. Sorry about
sure
that.
Are. So, you're okay.
Are there memories of the family gathering around the radio?
No, not really. No. We had a. I remember the radio itself. It was a great big looking thing. And that was on very frequently. My mother used to have it in the kitchen living room, and my father would have it in a room where he did some work, some book work, but would have another radio. No, I don't ever remember saying, oh, let's watch out, there's something on the radio.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Well, Neil found this clip from 1940, September 15th.
Here is the midnight news, and this is Alvar Liddell reading it. Up to 10 o'clock, 175 German aircraft had been destroyed in today's raids over this country. Today was the most costly for the German Air Force for nearly a month. In daylight raids, between 350 and 400 enemy aircraft were launched in two attacks against London and southeast England. About half of them were shot down.
There you go. Alvar Liddell.
Well, needless, at 3 years of age, I wasn't, I wasn't listening to that.
Yes. So you were blissfully unaware of the Second World War.
Blissfully.
Yes.
The only thing I remember when it was over was the first time seeing in a shop bananas.
Right.
We hadn't had bananas during the war, wherever they came from. And I remember looking at this thing, this yellow thing, I'm wondering, and my mother brought them home when she went grocery shopping, and I remember her peeling them and saying, this is very good for you. Usually when a mother would say that, she'd say, oh, but I thought the banana was gorgeous.
Right.
And I still do.
Got a thumbs up from me, yeah.
Yeah.
My father worked in Gentex in the BDF, where they made the Constellation sheets.
Ah.
I too remember the Hooter. It was part of Athlone Life, said Jackie, and our very best sheets in Loretta in Bray were Constellation sheets.
Imagine.
If my memory serves me, there was an aircraft called a Constellation, so somebody else.
Yeah, well, that would be in keeping with the time.
Yeah.
First airplane, 37, 38, 39. And Jackie was in the BDF, was he? Well, hello, Jackie, how are you?
Yeah. Mm. So that was what? Something dying and something. BDF, what did it mean again?
Bleaching, dying, and finishing.
Aha.
BDF, yeah.
I'm very familiar with the term notice box from primary school days in London. Any girl who raised her head above the parapet will be told to sit down, your notice box.
Wonderful to hear Mary.
That's Marie.
Yeah.
Okay, Mary, you're going to stay with us in our Athlone studio, and we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll talk to Mary O'Rourke more about the soundtrack to her life after this.
Okay.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Mary O'Rourke is in our Athlone studio, and she's guiding us through the soundtrack to her life. Mary, just for your information, and it's a coincidence, because last week we spoke to Colin McAnum. Was it last week or the week before? 2 weeks ago, about his soundtrack to his life, and he is the man who played Boule of Ogue at Noel Whelan's funeral.
Ah.
On his fiddle or his violin.
And it was only beautiful.
Yes, he's a beautiful player.
And it is a wonderful song.
Mm.
I know it's a rebel song, but there's something very wonderful about it. Yes, indeed.
I still treasure the Constellation sheets my gran gave me 30 years ago, says Geraldine. There's loads of
I'm always amazed at that because they went out of production like in the early 60s, and here people see they were made of the finest of cotton.
Mm.
And they lasted, obviously.
The finest of state cotton.
Yeah, finest cotton.
What did you want to be when you grew up? What were you dreaming of?
I wanted to be, believe it or not, a journalist. I was always reading where journalists were, what they were writing. And I used to say at home, I'm going to be a journalist. Now, there was never on television or radio or in the papers, there was never a woman journalist. Mm. I couldn't. And I was always going on about this, and there was no courses for journalism. And my father said, the best thing you can do is go to college and get a good degree in English. And that's what I did.
Sound advice.
Well, it was sound advice because it stood me in a lot of, it stood to me quite a lot. But I always wanted journalism, and kind of I've gone back a bit to it now. I do a bit of writing, as you know.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking at things, how I think journalists would do.
You have a journalist sigh. What sort of a teenager were you? Were you wild, rebellious?
Yeah, sort of. I went to boarding school, you see, so there wasn't much time for being rebellious, you know. You had to toe the line quite a lot. I hated boarding school. I was always cold and I was always hungry. And I was always lonely. Right. So imagine the three things in life.
Sounds grim, Mary.
Yeah, it was very grim. But I got a great education. And I always say that a terrific nun, a mother, Benvenuta, she taught us Latin and English. And she was, oh, you stand in the rain to listen to her. She was a terrific teacher. And that stood me in very good stead.
Sister Benvenuta.
Sister Benvenuta, yeah.
Great name. And then you went on to college and you did English.
I did an English degree, yes.
And was it around that time that the cotton factory closed down?
No, the cotton factory closed. It began to, you see, synthetics came in, you know, as you can imagine, and everybody went
Nylon,
wild for them. If they had waited the pace, Egyptian cotton is fiercely popular now. Anyway, it was no longer us against the world. You know, we were opening up and there was all sorts of other influences. So synthetics came in and crimpoline and jacqueline and all those things. And we all had to, the demand for the cotton went down and bit by bit, bits of it went spinning and different things. And then by the early 60s, it had virtually stopped. Yes, it had. Now, it had had from 35, let's say, to nearly 60, very steady employment, yeah.
So your parents bought a little hotel.
Yeah, it would be called, if they were around now, Mom and Dad, it was called a boutique hotel, 12 bedrooms.
Right.
Now, if you were, have you been to the Hudson Bay? You have,
I have,
bet.
Yes,
well,
I have.
It's the Taj Mahal of the Midlands.
It's a big hotel.
It's a big, with five extensions.
Yes.
But when I was 12, we went to live there. You see, the others were 17, 18, 19, all gone on to college and different things. So I was, my childhood from 12 on, which are, as you know, Ray, hugely formative years.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Yeah. I kind of grew up there, you might say.
It makes sense now, Mary, though, because you're then in the company of adults nearly all the time in a hotel.
I was, that's right,
yes, yeah.
And I liked my time there, but I missed town. And I used to get on my bicycle every day and ride into town where I'd meet my friends up in the ice cream parlour or the coffee shop or whatever, because they were my friends and I had made them in childhood. And then I went to the Hudson Bay and then I went to boarding school. So all of that. And then
when did you meet Enda? What age were you?
Oh, yeah. I met Enda. I went to college. To college in UCD in the old Earlsford Terrace when I was 17. And then my sister, who had been trained for hotel management, she got married and she went off to live in Galway. And my father and mother said to me, when I went through college and got my degree. Now, I had met Enda about a year earlier when I was about 18 going for 19. I met him in the Hudson Bay where the hotel was. I was playing tennis and he and another pal of his were out and they were watching us. And he said to the other guy, "Who's that girl?" And he told him and he said, "Well, I'd like to meet her." So he met me and we kind of hit it off, you know, I think we did anyway. And he used to come up and down to Dublin when I was in college to see me. And then when I got my degree and came home, my father said to me, "Would I stay at home for a year until they could get someone?" Because they had no one to help them, really.
With the hotel, yeah.
Yeah, in the hotel. I said, "I'm delighted. Oh, yes, of course I will." So I used to work during the day and fly off with them at night. And he had a car. Not many guys had cars then. And that's when
it was a real love story. I remember reading your book, your biography,
Just Mary. Yes,
Just Mary, and you spoke and wrote so lovingly about Enda.
Oh, I did. I loved him, and he loved me. And it was. That was from about 18. I was then 22 when I got married, and he was 24.
Right.
So in today's terms, it's very young.
But back in the day, everybody got married around that age.
You kind of had to if you wanted to be together. You know. There was no other way out of it.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you really were mad about one another, Ray, as we were, in love, and wanted to be physically together.
Ah, I see,
the only way you could do that.
Now I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
You see, you were speaking in code there. So
there was no code in
if
it.
You want to consummate, if you wanted to consummate your relationship, you had to get
my
married.
My God, we didn't know the word then. No, we certainly didn't know that word. But yeah, yeah.
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Yes, yeah. Indeed.
Any songs? I've one song here that you remember from your 20s. So you would have been courting end at the time.
Well, I was married when
you're
22.
Married, yes, too. Yes. Let's have a listen to this. This is 1965. 64.
Oh. My poor heart feels
oh, much
like
more. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I never see you again.
Butch Moore is right.
Oh, Butch was terrific, wasn't he?
That represented us in the first time we entered into the Eurovision Song Contest. That was our entry.
Butch Moore, and he was so good looking and had such a terrific voice. He came sixth,
which is a good showing compared to what we've been doing over the last few years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that what he was in it?
Sixth.
Well, I liked that song very much. And he sang it with great emotion. He did. Yeah.
And so you did the hotel and then you went back to teaching for
I had to go back to Maynooth to do my
H-dip.
Yes. Yeah. That was 9 years after I got my degree.
And how long did you teach for?
About 5 years. And no, in case you get any cause, I don't have a teacher's pension. I wasn't long enough in.
You're so defensive.
No, I'm not defensive.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
People have come back at me when I said I was, so you have a teacher. No,
right.
I never joined. You had to join the pension scheme.
You have a ministerial pension.
I have, exactly.
Yes. I had the pleasure of Mrs. O'Rourke for history and English.
Oh.
She had a knack of bringing the subject to life and we had so much respect for her. Absolutely lady who had the ability to keep all students engaged in Summerhill College. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's where I taught. That's a lovely, whoever you are, thank you.
Yeah, and David says, I remember Mary collecting us from the train station at Lone in her bright yellow Ford Escort and bringing us to Ballycairn, where we had the use of a boat. Me and four other lads, all 18, 19 year olds, which included her nephew Brian Jr. used to spend part of our summer holidays on the Shannon. So there.
Oh, there, yeah, and we all love the Shannon.
Liz says, loving listening to Mary O'Rourke, I was the model for Constellation Sheets in the Green Shield Stamps catalogue.
that's the woman I told you about
earlier.
I met her, and she was gorgeous looking when I met her.
That's Liz there.
There
now.
You are. Do you ever know what life throws at you?
Liz, great to hear from you. So I'd say more, you have more claims to fame, but that's one of your claims to fame.
Yeah.
That you were the model for Constellation Sheets. And there is a song in the ad for Constellation which went, Constellation, lovely lasting sheets for you, smooth crisp pillowcases too, beautiful for 5 more years, Constellation guarantees.
Oh, good.
I don't know if you can remember the tune.
No,
to that.
I can't remember the jingle. No,
and
I can't.
Mary O'Rourke Constellation means a group of stars. I'm sure that's why the sheet manufacturing company called it that. And I took out my wedding dress from 1982 the other day and it was wrapped in a
Constellation sheet.
It was indeed, yes.
Isn't that great?
And Mary here in Limerick, wish Mary O'Rourke all the best. I worked with her late husband, Enda, in Jacobs in Dublin.
Oh.
And Maura in Mayo says, you're a tonic. Enjoying the interview. And please say hello to Mary O'Rourke from another Mary O'Rourke and say thanks for all her support.
Hello, Mary O'Rourke. How are you?
So there. And delighted that you're interviewing Mary O'Rourke. Some years ago, during Active Ageing Week, Mary gave the homily at the Augustinian Church in Drogheda.
I did.
She is such an ad for positive ageing. Best wishes. That's Father Iggy O'Donovan.
Father Iggy O'Donovan, I love him. And he invited me up to give that homily. Uh-huh. And then I met him actually at Noel Whelan's funeral the last time I talked
to him. He's a great man.
He's a great guy.
Mary, I think we've delivered you up now to the steps of government buildings.
Please don't.
No, we have to go. We'll talk again, I'm sure.
Please. I've about tons of more stuff to tell you.
Well, we'll talk again. We will talk again. And it's always a pleasure talking to you, Mary. You know that. And
for me, the same, Ray.
Right,
absolutely.
Okay. Well,
I'm looking forward to tomorrow night now to Brian Kennedy and to some of the others.
Yeah, we've a great lineup tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Neil says we'll definitely talk to you before Christmas.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Bye.
Mary, mind yourself. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 on RaidRTE.ie. Now I'm joined in studio by Dee Cullen. Afternoon, Dee.
Hello, thanks for having us, Ray.
And Sinead is here as well on bass.
Hello. How you doing?
And Cam is on percussion.
How's it going?
So, D, what does D stand for?
Dara.
Right. And your song, All Right, was on the Radio 1 playlist.
For 4 weeks, I believe, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Great for us.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from?
Shankill. So very, very, very South Dublin.
Right. And you've been playing music since what age?
I started at 8. So yeah, I picked up my first guitar at 8. And I'm 24
now. Was there a moment?
There was. So my dad worked with a Beatles tribute band called the Classic Beatles, who are amazing. They're still going, check them out. But the John and the George from that band played at my communion party. And all the other kids were at the Bouncy Castle, and I was just lying on the ground listening to all these Beatles songs. So I used the communion money to buy a guitar. And ever since then, it's been all music.
And Beatles originally, was it a lot of Beatles stuff you were playing originally? Or?
Yeah, I think when I got the guitar, I got a Beatles, the greatest hits sort of songbook. I got that. So that was my first introduction to playing. And right. Then I kind of had a 90s rock phase as well, shortly after. So like Foo Fighters, Nirvana,
yes,
that sort of era. So that they were the two kind of, sort of starting points anyway.
So the song All Right, what's the background to it?
It was written earlier this year, so it's going to be on an album next year. The album's quite a dark piece. It was kind of about a dark time in my life, and All Right was the last song written. That's sort of just the message to myself that everything's going to be okay. So it's just about kind of overcoming a period of sort of anxiety and sadness, and just sending a message to yourself that things are going to be all right.
And are you all right?
Yes, all good now.
Great.
Thank you. Thanks for asking.
No, but this is a serious question. And is music important in sort of getting all right, if you know what I mean?
I think so. Especially writing music for me, it's a great sort of outlet for getting things out that you'd find hard to talk about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it too glib to ask you if it's a breakup album?
Oh, it's not a breakup
album.
No,
it's not a breakup album. More serious than that.
It's very self-indulgent sadness.
Okay.
Instead of with someone else.
Right. Okay. Right. All right. You're all right now, Dean.
All right now, yeah.
And Sinead on bass and Cam on percussion. When you're ready.
I've been picturing the people on the higher floor. I have hurt myself too many times to be this sure. And I'm a better man than I can take the credit for. Oh, it's gonna be alright. And I've been finding it much easier to be alone. I'm not scared to lose my breath and feel the weight come on. There are problems here that I know I just can't ignore. Gonna be alright. So come on, save me, save my soul. And come on, baby, I'll take control. Come on, save me, save me tonight. Oh, it's gonna be sleepless nights, there always is, but I've never been less worried about the future here. I'm just moving on to greener years. Oh, it's gonna be alright. And come on, save me, save my soul. Get there with a bit of luck. The work is hard and the days are tough, but it's gonna be alright.
That was brilliant. That was really brilliant.
Thank you very much.
You're such a beautiful voice.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Ray. It
was a really beautiful voice. And you're playing with Monday, Friday, October 25th, which is this day week, in Dublin's Lawes Lane. And then November 22nd with Hawk at the Soundhouse in Dublin.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's available to download and stream and everything else.
Yeah, it's on all the usual spots.
Platforms, yes. Yeah. And you're going to stay on and sing us a Beatles song before we leave at 4:30. For the moment, Dee Cullen, Sinead, Cam, thank you very much. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Amazing song, just what I need right now, says that person. Well, Dee's going to stay with us and sing us out before the end of the programme. Now, Monday night, RT2, 9:30, episode 2 of a new dating show called Pulling With My Parents. It does exactly what it says on the tin, as in two 20-somethings hand over their phones and their apps, Tinder and Bumble and whatever, to their parents, and they do the choosing for them. On Monday night, you will see Megan. How are you doing, Megan?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
Good. And her mum, Pauline. How are you doing, Pauline?
Very well, thank you.
And you will see Daniel. How are you doing, Daniel?
Well, Ray, how are you keeping?
And Daniel's dad, Danny. How are you doing,
Ray,
Danny?
How are you?
You're all very welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome to Dublin.
And he's off.
And he's off, is right. Right. So, Pauline, you're Megan's mum.
Yes. Sir.
Yes, and Megan handed over her phone to you and she showed you her Tinder profile and Bumble profile. What was the first thing that struck you about what she was doing online?
I was kind of disgusted.
You were disgusted?
Not by me, down out.
By the messages people, guys would send her.
Right. Mm. You didn't know that was going on?
No.
No. And what age are you, Megan?
I am 30 next week.
Okay. So your daughter's 28, 29 and you were disgusted by what was happening.
Yeah.
Right. What sort of things? Was it just emojis or was there more than emojis?
Body parts.
Oh, body parts, right. Yeah. Body parts, right. Right, okay. People were sending body parts.
And rude comments and...
Right, okay.
So things they'd like to do.
To Megan.
Yes.
Right, okay. Danny, what was your experience when you first encountered your son's activity on Tinder and the like?
A young fella in a dire T-shirt.
That was him.
That was him.
Right, okay.
What is the shirt you had on? How he could find a woman in that is beyond me.
Well, it was a vest top sort of thing.
Whatever. It was brutal.
I was on holidays.
It was brutal. I suppose that the apps, I seen the conversation, as fun. He was communicating with people and he was having fun.
Okay.
You know what I mean, that's what young people do. They have fun and I didn't see anything that was rude or wrong. He just had fun and it just the whole profile seemed to be wrong.
Wrong, okay. And we'll talk to you about how you changed it in a moment. Megan, you haven't been on a date, you hadn't been on a date prior to the programme for how long?
For maybe 2 to 3 years, kind of.
Right.
So, quite a while.
Quite a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And why do you think that was?
I think that I make myself unavailable. So I kind of sometimes like make out that I'm kind of undateable because I don't kind of make myself free to kind of go on dates. Like if a guy asks me out on a date, usually I go, oh, I'm really busy, I can't, sorry about that.
Yes.
And then I get really nervous. I get like super nervous when it comes to going on dates, and I usually kind of I find it really hard to go all the way through to the date.
So it's easier not to do it than to do it.
Yeah, I think it actually, it's so much easier to be single because there's just not a lot of complications.
Everybody seems to ask her, did she meet anyone?
Yeah.
When she comes home, I said, did you meet anyone this week? No.
Yeah,
no.
But the problem is if I was to, we'll say, just go into a club or a pub and maybe, you know, meet someone in the disco lights, whatever.
In the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell my mother about that because there's no point telling mum that I met someone because I find if I tell, like in the past,
you get the hopes up. Like,
yeah, mum goes, oh, great, when you're bringing him home. And I'm like, it was just a shift. I'm probably not going to see him again.
Right.
And then that's hard to explain.
I can't even say that to him. I'll hear about
10 different reasons why I shouldn't have gotten with that
you
one.
See, there's a whole different way of doing it now, Pauline, isn't there?
Yeah.
Because there's a period of time before you go exclusive.
Yeah, well, that's the problem now, isn't
there? I'm texting a guy, I should say. What good is texting a guy?
Well, what is exclusive? Do you know, like, in this day and age, like, how far do you have to go to be exclusive?
I think it's self-explanatory, Daniel. Exclusive is where you are exclusively with somebody else.
I think what Daniel is trying to say is once you put it on social media, it becomes exclusive.
Yeah, insta-official. And someone puts photo, you share the person on social media, I think that kind of makes
So would you put a picture of you and somebody else on social media, that's exclusive, right?
If I was solely dating them and we're exclusive and we're not seeing anyone else, either of us, and that we want everyone to know that we're together. Because
okay.
I think a lot of people that are seeing each other nowadays don't want to post on social media together because they don't want social media to know that they're in a relationship. They want people to think they're available all the time. So that's where I think they're kind of...
That's a bit messed up.
I know.
What, holding out for a hero?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Where is he?
When you have your hero right in front of you.
I know.
It's really changed. And I think for me going on the show, I wanted to show to Mum how different dating is nowadays. It's not like what it used to be.
Mm. And you looked at Megan's profile pictures and what she was saying about herself and you felt that that's the reason she wasn't getting dates.
Because she wasn't saying anything about herself.
Mysterious.
Right.
Yeah, I want them to ask me what about my life and not
but
just
wouldn't you?
If I know their answers.
Okay. And all the pictures were of a type, weren't they?
Yeah, they're all kind of modelling or
whatever. I have to say, your mum's right. You did look like a model in every photograph. And you did say, once that maybe possible sort of suitors, partners were intimidated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. My friends sometimes say to me on nights out, they're like, you can be a little bit intimidating, a bit scary. And I was like, I swear I'm not. I was like, I'm always just up for the laugh. But I'm quite...
Shy or shy?
No, I'm not shy. That's the problem. I think on nights out, I'm not shy. So I'll come up and I'll chat straight up to a guy. And then I think guys sometimes are a bit like, whoa, hold on. I haven't even asked.
Do you know what isn't established in the programme? What sort of man are you looking for?
Me?
Yeah.
Someone who's probably as sporty and as competitive as I am, because I don't know if you noticed, I'm a little bit competitive.
You are.
Likes travelling.
Likes mad into sports. I've travelled around the world going to rugby games and I wish I was at Japan right now, but I'm not. So I want to be at the next World Cup, so I want a guy that wants to come with me to the World Cup, or else, you know, just someone who's involved in sports. Because I love watching sport and going to games.
Yes, if two people are competitive in a relationship, probably not going to work, maybe.
But I think a guy
that could be entertaining.
For a while, for people watching in, but not if you're in the middle of it.
I had an ex who never let me win anything, and it used to be great fun because it was like I was always striving to be better.
Okay.
So that's why I need someone to kind of challenge me as well.
Do you want someone to be better?
I want someone to challenge me.
I don't think it would work if someone's better. I think you wouldn't like that.
What about you, Daniel? What sort of girl are you looking for?
Oh, someone just takes my interest. You know, someone that was nice, someone that's outgoing. Do you know, I like adventure. I like hitting the mountains or going out exploring. Like, someone just come out and do something with me.
She nearly wants a motorbike to keep up with him.
Right. Sorry, Daniel, if you met Megan out for a night, would you ask her out?
Yeah, of course I would. Jesus.
The Ray D'Arcy Show, where love stories begin. Because you hadn't met before now, had you?
No.
I recognise each other from the ads that have been going out all week.
Yes, yeah. What age are you, Daniel?
I'm 26.
Yeah. Right, so what about a younger man?
I've tried that in the past and it hasn't really worked out too well. No offence.
Oh, no, it's all good.
She thinks I need an older man, Mum does.
Yes, and you're looking for some... You're farm obsessed, Pauline.
Yeah, I want a man with land. Because Megan loves horses.
Road frontage.
Yeah. No.
Frontage, Jesus. She loves horses. About the frontage again.
You've horses, have you?
She loves
I
horses.
Do, yeah. I've grown up with horses and grown up around animals, so I want to rescue every dog and cat that I can.
Right.
I want to basically have my own little petting farm.
Okay.
And I just, I'm not yet though, because we were talking about this. I love to travel and I have so many parts of the world I haven't been to yet. So I want to do all my traveling. And if I was a data farmer right now and get in a serious relationship, that's the end of my holidays.
Yes.
Or else I'm just going to travel solo, which, because I know farmers don't really get much time off.
They don't.
But I'm not ready to commit to a farmer just yet.
So there's a problem there. Your mum wants you to be with a farmer. You don't want to be with a farmer.
Yeah, I told her I want to.
She's looking for a bullseye.
Now, when you tune in on Monday night, you're going to see Pauline and Danny set up Daniel and Megan on two dates.
Mm-hmm.
You're set up with Tommy and Gary.
Yeah.
And you're set up with Afrique and Kerry.
Yeah.
Yes. And then at the end, you choose one and you wait to see if they want to go out with you.
I tell you, it's not nice waiting either.
Oh. No.
After the date, we decide which one we think would suit the partner, and we have to wait to find out if they come to see them.
There's a brilliant part of the programme.
Selena.
When you go on the dates, You, Danny, and Selena, who's Daniel's sister.
Yeah.
And you, Pauline, and Imelda.
My sister, yes.
Yeah, your sister, who's Megan's aunt, going to the spy truck or something like that.
Yes, right, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're looking at the date.
That's absolute carnage, sort
and,
of.
And Daniel, you had an earpiece in that was invisible to the person you were going on a date with. So too did Megan. Yeah. And they were offering you advice.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're giving instructions.
I tell you, it was so loud in the thing as well. So, like, I'm there sitting, chatting away to Africa and the earpiece is like shouting at me, he's there, slip.
What does slip mean?
Oh, because I have an old slip on one of my dates. Like,
oh, so you look vulnerable.
I'm there, like, chatting away to her. He's screaming in my ear. I'm trying to listen to what he's saying, and also kind
of. We're basically trying to have fun with them as well. Make fun of the date.
Okay, Megan, I want your opinion here. They redid, Selena and Danny Sr. there redid his profile pictures.
Yeah.
And they decided on one with the dog.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you fall for a guy who's pictured with a little pup?
Dogs definitely work. I think a lot of guys, and actually, you know, I did have my dog in my social media, my dating apps. I just think everyone loves animals, and if they don't like animals, then I have been told
dogs are a good one now. Like, yes. If a girl sees a dog in a picture, she's like,
I'll give you this new word for the weekend: dog fishing.
Dog fishing.
Yeah, because guys are actually borrowing dogs for their profile pictures and then give them back.
Did you use your own dog for a picture?
Our two babies.
My dog, I think, Bella, I hope you've seen the episode. She was with us for filming quite a bit, so I think she features.
She features. Yes.
Bella's my hero.
I think our dog's
Okay, it's Monday night, RT2. Well worth a watch. It's very entertaining. Pulling with my parents, you will see Daniel, Danny, Megan and Pauline.
Thank you very much
for coming in. Will you stay on? Because Dee's going to sing us out. What are you going to sing for us, Dee?
Something by the Beatles.
You see,
thank you.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ray.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover. Something in
lovely. Lee Cullen. We'll definitely be checking out that singer again, says somebody. And that was something. And thanks, Sinead. Thanks, Cam, for coming in as well. No chemistry between Daniel and Megan during that song. I was just looking at them there. I thought their eyes would meet across Studio 10. And that would be it.
More chemistry there with Dara.
Say again.
Please, we weren't on camera.
Oh, God. You got to get the angle right now.
We were slipping notes under the table.
They don't do that anymore, Danny. It's all texting and Tinder and that sort of thing.
Kudos to Dara over here, though. He's amazing. He's really good. Jesus.
Thanks, guys.
That was great. Well done. Now, tomorrow night on the telly, just a reminder, we're on at 5 to 10. Brian Kennedy is going to sing us through the soundtrack to his life. Not the soundtrack, but the song book of his life. We've Andrew Maxwell, who's directly coming from London, where he's been emceeing a rally. Alison Hammond will be on, PJ Gallagher will be on, and we have the brilliant story of, I don't know if you know this man, he used to be a jockey, Paddy Merrigan, and he has a brilliant story to tell of sort of falling off the tracks and then coming back on, and he'll be on as well. That's all tomorrow night at 5 to 10. Again, thanks to everybody here, Dee, and everybody from Pulling With My Parents. Mary Wilson's on the way. We are back on the radio 3 o'clock on Monday. Have a great weekend.